Okay, there we go. I think it's still recording, right, Deej?
Yep, I see the recording. Yep.
Oh, that's good. So, do you have anything you've been thinking about or want to talk about or anything?
Yeah, I don't really have too much in terms of like a topic right now, so. If you had anything you wanted to discuss, or
let's see,
I'm all ears.
Well, you know, I on the website, the Open Sangha Foundation, I put a post that was a bit poetic. But it went something like, when we're walking in the forest, what happens to politics? When we're smelling a beautiful flower, what happens to meditation practice and Buddhism? When we're enjoying ourselves with wholesome laughter, what happens to religions, sex, philosophies? And I wrote it because I like that it kind of with poetry you could kind of express things in a more simple way, you know. And in that little example there, it's just basically saying, when we're satisfied here and now, when we're breathing in and coming back to the elements of our body, to not self, to the truth of dissatisfaction, to impermanence, to old age, sickness, and death, what happens to everything else, you know? What happens to the idea of a self? And I like how Damarado has told us that in the Buddhist time when they're talking about anatta, a lot of it had to do with the soul. And I was thinking about that the other day. I was like, huh, a soul, that's interesting. Because what is time, really? Time is simply the measurement between physical objects and their distances from each other and their speeds in relation to each other. That's all time is. So why would a soul be relevant in what I'm saying? Because if you're talking about a soul, all of a sudden you've created an object, a mental object. And what does this mental object do? It travels, it blasts off. It's like the spaceship. You know, you want to travel back in time in the future, you need a spaceship, right? You you want to travel faster than the speed of light, well, you need a spaceship that would hold up to that. And the joke is there is no spaceship really that can hold up to that. But in our mind, when we create a soul, what happens? We travel, blast off to the metaphysical heaven, right? Stay there a little bit, blast down into the metaphysical hell, and all the myriad of places in the mundane Buddhist world that may exist of the gods and goddesses. We blast off to the past, where this person said this about me that I didn't like. We blast off to the future of the worry about bills and concerns of what will happen to the physical body and the people we love and the things in the material world that we love. And what do you need to travel to all those places? You need the I. The I, me, my. And the Buddha understood that. So anatta, no self, no soul, takes away the little spaceship, you know. If the little spaceship is taken away, where are we finally resting? Back here on Earth, back here, right now. Gladdening the mind, right here, right now. Satisfaction is the name of the game. And If you're not right here right now, you're traveling with the soul, upon investigation, it doesn't hold up because you realize very quickly, oh, it's all a bunch of crazy bullshit that's driving me mad. There is no soul. The concept of a soul is beautiful. The idea helps express certain experiences, opinions. Sure, on some level, these things exist, but 99%, they're just not real. They're meant as an expression of language to help us get through whatever projects we may have going on. They're just a tool, you know? But we have forgotten that they're just a tool, and the tool has ended up owning the master. The hammer starts hitting the nails with the person, picks up the person and starts nailing him like a blockhead, you know, a blockhead. Yeah. And if you could find, and I always love, just like Damarada, I really like simplifying things. And like a quote from Bono, actually, I saw in this Bukowski documentary, he said, I like to get down to the bone, to the marrow of the bone of what we're talking about. Otherwise, we're just pissing in the wind, wasting each other's time. So what are we really getting into? Is the Dukkha Dukkha Niroda finding satisfaction right here, right now, wherever we sit? And you'll be hard pressed to find anywhere in the entirety of the Pali Canon, which which I've read very little of. I've read some, but probably like, I don't know, 10%.
There's a lot.
Maybe 2%. I don't know. But the point is, it doesn't matter. If I know that it's about gladdening the mind here and now, Dukkha Dukkha Niroda, because rest assured, everything in that Pali Canon, and I challenge anybody to prove me wrong, if you find something in the Pali Canon that isn't about gladdening the mind here and now, that isn't about satisfaction here and now, then throw it away. It's not relevant. It's toilet paper. If it's not talking about in one form or another, in one way or another, gladdening the mind here and now, finding satisfaction, then what are we doing? You know, but people misunderstand. They have avidya, ignorance. They can't understand the simple concept of, if a little baby dukkha comes up in your mind, remember to look and change with our wholesome, nurturing thoughts and actions. We turn a bad situation into a good situation. But people can't accept that. They can't accept coming home to the breath, resting here and now, away from these delusions. So they go to the Buddha. Hey, man, we're going to write down your words, dude. It's going to be called the Pali Canon. And the Four Noble Truths isn't, there is the Pali Canon, and those people who read the Pali Canon and do not read the Pali Canon. The Eightfold Path isn't, read chapter 1, 2, book 3, 4 of the Pali Canon. No, nothing to do with the Pali Canon. But that wasn't good enough for his students, is gladdening the mind here and now. They wanted something he couldn't give them. So all he had left to do was take creating satisfaction here and now, coming back to the breath here and now, joyfully, and he had to chop that shit up into God knows how many pages. And he didn't really do it. His students did, but he's helping them, talking to them. This guy is a Hindu, so he's going to tell him in specific ways. This guy is an atheist, he tells him. This guy's the mundane Buddhist view. He's helping him along. This guy, you know, here, this, that. Here's women over here. Here's men over here. Householders over here. Monks over here. And he's got his hands full. The students have their hands full, just making a whole bunch of poetry. And it's all saying the same damn thing. Dukkha Dukkha Niroda. Gladdening the mind here and now. So, in a way, it's for like the children. The children need the school books. You know, the small children. And the small children, in order for them to understand things about life, the teacher needs to get down to their level. So it's interesting that the bhikkhus and the abbots, you know, they don the golden robes, the shaved heads, the ceremonies. But I was thinking about this. It's like the kindergarten teacher who puts on the little rainbow hat and the makeup and the masks, and she plays the games with the kids. It's not that she's so ignorant she doesn't recognize she's acting foolish. It's that she's so wise, she understands, in order to help teach these kids, I have to get down to their level. I have to help them. Sometimes it takes some colorful robes, some rituals, some dancing, some singing. Ironically, there is no dancing and singing, but you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
There is a chanting, some of it, but what they're doing is they're saying, okay, gladdening the mind wasn't good enough for you, huh? Like, Sukha's not good enough right here, right now. Right? You want to complain. You want to be a hungry ghost. You want this, you want that, you want all these things you can't have. Okay, we'll play your game. We'll create a whole bunch of books with a whole bunch of guidelines. And you get to wear the colorful uniforms. And for those of you who can't participate in the colorful uniforms, we're going to have special little jobs for you, little names you're going to be called, householders. And you're going to have all these little things set up just how you like it. And they're going to keep them busy, you know, until they get it. And the abbots and the bhikkhus, they understand. They're the teachers, you know. They understand that they don't get the simplicity. Not all abbots are teachers, apparently, but the good ones, like Buddhadasa Bhikkhu, he understands this is just, he would take his robe like this and say, this is just orange cloth. What do you think this is? Another uniform for your mask, another uniform for your avatar, like a video game. Another colorful costume is all it is. And he told them, you know, but they take it personally sometimes. They're like, wow, isn't that disrespectful? Isn't that, it's like him calling the dog the what do they call him? Longpo something?
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it freaks people out. But he's telling them, you know, like, don't take yourself so personal. There is no self. Don't take things so seriously. You know? And if have you ever met somebody and it's like, I was talking about this earlier on a video I made, but have you ever met somebody who's like, who seems interested in changing? In getting rid of dukkha, getting rid of dissatisfaction. So you talk to them, you know. And there's nothing you can say. There's nothing you can do. You know, remember to look glad in the mind. But what about this? Oh, that too. You know, remember to look glad in mind. Bring it back to the breath here and now. Everything's okay. Everything's fine. No, everything not okay. No, everything not fine. I got this and this and past and future and this and this. Okay. So tell me, how do I do it? How do I fix it? Well, we have to remember to look and don't worry, be happy. Yeah, I did that. It doesn't work. It's like, I don't know what you want from me. I don't know what, maybe Buddhism's not for you. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe if you were that deep within a pity party, you just need to ride that thing out. I don't know. I don't have the answers. I don't have all the answers, man. But it's apparent to me. It's like I remember Damarada would talk about, if the boat fills with water, you could either empty out the water and sing happily, joyfully, or you can empty out the water and just bitch and complain. But one way or another, that water's got to get out of there. And one way or another, you could do it in misery or you could do it in heaven. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't have the ability to see that they're even in hell. They've been in hell so long that they, to them, they've tricked themselves and they think it's heaven. It's like, if it's heaven, why are you bitching and complaining so much? But in order to show that I'm not either bitching and complaining about the bitching and complaining. It's a good thing, because when I see people like this, when I hear stories like this, it's like somebody's holding up a mirror, reflecting it in my face. And I'm like, yeah, I remember when I was like that. I remember when I thought I knew it all. I remember when I was complaining. I remember when I'm bitching. God, it feels good that I'm not like that. And they become little teachers for me.
Yeah.
Hungry ghosts can be some of the best teachers. Because it's like, man, I don't ever want to. I don't ever want to be like that. So that's a very wonderful experience to encounter negativity sometimes. Because you could change anything into your benefit. Like I call it the holy alchemy, turning lead into gold. We're turning dukkha into sukha. And the breath, like that movie Little Buddha that we were talking about. I don't know if it was Discord or something.
I think it was on Discord, Yeah,
with Keanu Reeves, when he points to the earth and says, the earth is my witness. That's what I think, too, about the breath, because it's like still part of the elements, you know, like wind, you know. You're still pointing to the earth when you're looking at the breath, because really you're pointing essentially or basically to the elements of what the body is comprised of. And it brings you home. And why is that important? Why is it important pointing to the breath? And that's an interesting word, to pointer, guiding, the finger pointing to the moon. The gardener's hand tilling the soil. It's important because when you're pointing to the breath, just like in that poem that I was originally talking about, when you're smelling and enjoying the beautiful fragrance of the sweet flower in the field, Buddhism disappears. Right and wrong disappear. Rules and regulations disappear. Robes disappear. Religions disappear. And most importantly, dukkha disappears. Because what is dukkha after all? Liking, disliking, being and becoming, birth and death. Why is there birth and death? Why is there liking and disliking? Why is there all these things? Because we're running after that which we don't have. Those things we want that we don't have. What? And it doesn't even have to be material things. It could be situations. The situation isn't the way I want it. It's not always like I didn't get the car I want. Could be like, well, the situation isn't how I want. My body should be more healthy. My legacy should be stronger. I should have a greater story told after the body fades away. These are all causes for great dukkha. And we're in the practice of rinsing and repeating. And I like to say getting in that samadhi state with the breath, very calm, peaceful state. And then the baby dukkhas come up, but it gets easier. You don't have as many baby dukkhas. And they'll never go away completely, in my opinion. But just like I said, the mind's a garden. Start off with brambles and your thorns and you clear it out. And sure, it takes a little, some might say work, but when you're enjoying it, it's not work at all, because you're gonna enjoy the fruits of your labor. So it becomes a play. It becomes something you enjoy doing. So all those weeds go away. All those rabbits that are eating your vegetables go away. You put the fence in order. You put things properly. And it becomes easier over time. And then you bear fruits. And it doesn't mean like, oh, I got a weed come up. I must be a shitty gardener. It's like, no, weeds come up. Dogs are going to shit in your yard. That's going to give it nutrients. Dukkha, the nutrients. You know, the shit that joy comes from. So dukkha is really no problem. It's actually awesome. In the yin yang, you know. I don't know. What do you think, bud?
Yeah. No, I like the also the analogy of dukkha as that bell. So for wakefulness, when we smell the dukkha, you know, that means we can wake up. So, yeah. Also coming back, yeah, and appreciating that first noble truth of, hey, there is dukkha. Right, so it's like, hey, it's wise to keep an eye out. Coming back to the breath, I mean, that has its own just coming back to the physical and that sort of like balancing it out, because the mind can get so far out there so quickly. And so being able to come back and actually wake up to be like, oh, what's happening now? That's where the breath is so helpful. It just like, it really is, because it's about breaking that cycle, right? And so, yeah, it's like, hey, we wake up, maybe we catch the dukkha, we see it, and then we take that breath and we step more into our senses, if you will, and what's actually going on, as opposed to these long-winded stories. And yeah, when all those stories drop away and you just have reality, it's like, where is the dukkha then? Yeah. Yeah, because it's like something with dukkha, it's like something's off, right? It's just like something's a little bit, something's not right. Mm. This is why I like to joke when it, you know, we talk about, you know, right sati or right, you know, remembrance or mindfulness or the Noble Eightfold Path, how it's got right in front of it. But it's more that it makes everything all right. Because when we drop away the rights and the wrongs, right, in the that ordinary kind of sense, you know, oh, well, this this coffee cup, right, it, I don't like it, it's wrong, right? When we drop that kind of thing, everything becomes all right. It's all right now. So it kind of actually allows us to come back to see completion and rest in that sense of completion for a while. Yeah. For as long as we remember to. And then the mind goes and drifts off into ignorance again. And it's okay, because we spot it and we return back home. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's good to do it in a skillful way. Like, we can make these videos and we can sit here in silence, but I've been in silence for like 90% of my day. And I think a video of silence wouldn't really help somebody who's trying to, or is curious about the Dhamma. So in these moments, I like to think of, I think it was Ajahn Sumedho. I forget who told him, Ajahn Chah, or somebody told him, like, hey, man, when he was a young monk, they're like, he was really afraid to give talks. He's like, well, what do I say, you know? And the Dhamma is simple. So just like the Pali Canon, we got to break up, don't worry, be happy, into a myriad of different ways until the people listening understand. But we're basically just repeating the same thing in a skillful way. So if we have the opportunity, whether on Skype or YouTube, that's the time to talk a lot. That's the time to dig in. And it's not like there's going to be any grave consequences if we don't, but that's the time to help people who are curious, I would say. But just like Ajahn Sumedho, when he would come on, he would talk and he would be so nervous and he would just be like, keep going. I think Ajahn Chah or somebody would tell him, like, keep going. And then he'd do an hour again, and he'd do 2 hours. Then he'd do three. Then he'd do four. Then he'd do five. Then he'd do six. And he's like, fuck, man, I've been talking about the Dhamma for like 6 hours. And he would make him do it day after day until he just, all the fear left his body, all the anxiety left his body, all the questions of what should I or shouldn't talk about left his body. And I like the free-flowing art form in a way. Like Dhammarada always says, like, the Dhamma is the practice. It's like art, you know? It's like dancing. It's like art. I always love that free-form way, that free-spirited way of just talking about the Dhamma. Because then you're separating the wheat from the chaff, you know? It's like, what is the Dhamma? Why is it important? Why should we listen to somebody talking about it? Why is it something that needs to be talked about? And the answer is, man, there's a lot of suffering out there. And there's a lot of people trapped in samsara, in the world of man, the world of society, the forbidden fruit of knowledge. And that knowledge in the Garden of Eden that they were eating was liking, disliking, being and becoming, birth and death, societal knowledge. Societal knowledge of something is out there that's good enough that you don't have. And the grass is always greener, whatever it may be. I'm doing a Skype call. Maybe the grass will be greener when it's done. And then when I'm not doing a Skype call, oh, that would be nice to do a Skype call. And then when I'm not exercising, oh, maybe it'd be nice to exercise. And the grass is always greener and so on and so forth. For me, for you, for everybody on Earth. And that therein lies a lot of the cause for the sufferings, is the grass is always greener. Starting with the false premise that something always must be done that isn't being done right now. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that really goes with, like, that restlessness, not being able to actually rest with what's currently happening in this present moment experience. Yeah, grass is always greener. We're popping off to, oh, I just want to get whatever this current experience is over with. And then when we do get it over with, you know, it's funny because there can be, you know, remorse. Oh, we didn't experience that. Oh, man, I wish I was at that, you know, I experienced that more, the prior thing.
Mm.
Or it's on to the next thing. So actually coming back and enjoying what is currently happening, yeah, can be something where we're very wishy-washy with. So that's where, yeah, talking about the Dhamma and also developing the skills here of Sati and waking up actually allows us to return much more frequently than we would have prior.
And in a weird way, like my examples earlier, it's about growing up. The American school system, the American education, the Western mindset, just like I was talking about the monks with the robes, one day you'll grow up. And maybe, maybe not, but you'll take off the robes. You won't need them anymore. And maybe the abbots, just out of the kindness of their heart, are still staying around to help teach them, and that's wonderful. But then what happens when the student understands? He'll either leave, or he'll still wear the robes, but now he's the teacher. Now he's not wearing the silly hat because he's mistaken. He's wearing the silly hat to help, out of the kind of his heart, teach other people. But I think that's why Zen has always appealed to me. Not that one's better or worse or anything like this. But in Zen, it's almost like I felt like it's the big boy school. You know, we're not going to hold your hand. You act up, we're going to tell you about it. You do something, we're going to slap you. I never condone violence, but this is just for communicating a point. It was like the army. It was like a no bullshit way, you know? And I always admired that because it, when you treat somebody like an adult, they tend to respect you. Not everybody. Some people are very, they need that coddling. They need that, but in Zen, I and even going deep, that one guy was saying, like the Zendos and the various temples and traditions and all, and the different sects. But that's why I always really liked Zen Master Ryokan and Zen Master Ikku. Even though at the end of Zen Master Ikku's life, he became the master at some temple, just like, I think, out of the kindness of his heart, because he always spoke out against temples and stuff. But from the word go, these guys, these masters, they always just had the rags they were wearing. When people would come to them and ask about their practice, they were always just playing hide and seek with the children in the field of the village. They were always giving medicine. You know, they're always helping dogs who had a wounded leg or something. They really were the embodiment of the Dhamma. You know, I like to say there were the adults in the room. And with Westerners, they have a lot of strong points. And one of those strong points is, you'll notice with a lot of people in Buddhism, especially beginners, they're good at the scholarly study. You know, they're good at the things that show that they're doing a good job. It's like in school, sit down, shut up. Oh, we're good at that. I could show everybody. what a great Dhamma practitioner. Smile and stand here and not move a muscle. Or I can recite this from the Pali Canon and this sutta and this and this and this. That's wonderful. There's nothing wrong with that. But don't mistake the finger for the moon. Eventually, we have to become adults and see for ourselves what the ancient masters, the teachers were talking about. Eventually, we have to put on our big boy pants and not take others' recommendations, others' guidelines too seriously unless we see for ourselves. Like the Buddha said, don't believe me just because I'm saying it. Why are you sitting there like a chicken, you know, lighting this incense for hours and hours and doing the metta meditation and doing all this stuff when you're just going to be complaining the next day? You're going to find something else to complain about. What's the point? You know, we're doing things to make a change. We're doing things to bring satisfaction. We're doing things to transform dukkha into sukha. And if you hang on too tightly to letting people see what a good Buddhist you are, if you hang on too tightly, even listening to what certain masters say and falling on their every word, if you hang on too tightly to robes and rituals, you become the dumb animal. You become the just go along to get along, I guess. I think this is what I want. I'm not sure. You really have to see for yourself. You have to look within your heart. Like Jesus said, the kingdom of heaven is within you. Sure, certain books can help lead you to the kingdom of heaven. Sure, maybe some rituals may help calm the mind, whatever. But eventually you have to give up those crutches, those training wheels.
Yeah, I think that's the thing with rituals and what have you, is it's to see them for what they are, to not be caught by the superstition of them, and also to understand the danger, you know, in them. It's not necessarily like, you know, never light incense, right? Because that would just be, ironically enough, another rule.
Yeah.
But, but
yet another delusion to cling to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And so either, you know, rituals or the absence of rituals can also just be another aesthetic that one clings mm-hmm. to. So it's being able to see that, see the danger, and understand what's actually going on. Like you said, mm-hmm. take that look for yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. And ironically, some of the best... the best language in the Dhamma is the silence of the heart. I think that's why it's funny when Ajahn Sumedho's like, it was either Ajahn Sumedho or Ajahn Brahm, but they were like, before one of their talks, like, well, it's time to talk about the thing that's extremely, not difficult, but it's the thing that doesn't really need to be talked about. Let's talk about it. Or, you know what I mean? Let's talk about the slippery thing that cannot be captured in words. Let's talk about it. Because, I mean, it can be captured in words as far as we're just chilling out. We're just happy with the way things are. We're just, if something comes, we make sure that it, we transform it so it doesn't cause dissatisfaction. We bring ourselves back to the breath, to the here and now. Away from delusional thinking and thoughts. But that's enough. That's the right effort. But that's not often the right effort for everybody. A lot of people need the different examples. They need the different things, the different translations, the different vocabulary, all to express, don't worry, be happy. Have you ever heard of Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche from Tibetan Buddhism?
I'm trying to remember. Is he more modern or?
He passed away. He was actually the teacher of the Dalai Lama.
Okay, yeah.
The main teacher.
Yeah, I haven't really heard too much about him or what he had to say.
He was awesome. Hopefully I could find a, I think I have one here, but oh yeah. But why I bring him up is because I have a few books from him, but the thing that always struck me as interesting, I like when Damarato talks about smiles, you know, and, I read a few of these guys' books, but I gotta say, like, what always struck me the most about him powerfully was just his, like, his face. Like, he was just a really nice dude. Like, he just looks so peaceful, you know? And I've seen lots of pictures of him. And this book, if anybody's interested, is called The Wish-Fulfilling Jewel. It's a good one. But I always thought that was interesting that this guy, even though it's a different style of Buddhism than I'm accustomed to, I don't even think he spoke English. And when you're reading his books, it's a little different style than like the Theravada or Zen that I'm used to. But I have so much books from this guy, not because so much I want to read everything about him, but just because his face like was... giving off this beautiful energy of just like, whatever, dude, you know, like,
yeah.
Just kind of like a peaceful grace, you know. And it was it's a look of being here and now. And I always admired that dude. But anyway, if anybody's interested, his name's Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche. And I found a few people like that sometimes in different styles, not just Buddhism, but yeah. But hey, man, do you have anything else you want to talk about? Any compliments, complaints, concerns?
Concerns.
One of my old bosses would always say that. I thought it was funny.
Yeah. But no, I'm. I'm pretty good all around. Enjoyed the conversation.
Sure, you don't want to complain?
So nah, I don't feel like complaining right now. We'll see. Oh, well,
I love complaining.
Yeah.
See, if you love complaining, it doesn't do any harm.
Yeah. Oh boy, how's that for a transformation? Yeah, but I think it's one of those things where it can be very. At least if we look at the modern pop culture, and there's so much in terms of hate watching and all this stuff, right? Where it's like, you know, it's very easy for one to slip into, I think, ignorance, like when they're in that sort of state. So it requires a fair bit of, you know, being aware, right? So, yeah, when it comes to that sort of thing. When it comes to complaining,
skillful means.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, man, that's all the juice I got for today.
Yeah, to be honest, I was kind of coming in with a little bit more of a listening aspect, so I wasn't really prepped for too much in terms of role in conversation, so.
You're always perfect, man. Yeah, no complaints from me. I'm always just thankful when you show up. I'm like, oh, sweet. We're going to have a meeting today. We're going to have a group today.
Yeah. Cool. Well, like I said, I did like seeing you on last week, so it was good. It was good. I didn't watch the whole thing yet, but yeah, it was nice. Yeah, when I can make it, it's nice to pop in and, you know, show support and keep it going. Yeah.
You're awesome, dude. Have you made any recent YouTube videos yet?
Not recently, since like the last one. So I might come out with one.
I like them, dude. They're good.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I saw you were uploading too. I saw some of that as well. Oh. So that's pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Here and there. But yeah, I like yours. They're very informative.
Yeah.
Very well. Especially with the nature background.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and a lot of that's actually just from behind our house there. So got that forest, so yeah, it's nice. But yeah, I'll get around to it at some point. Make the one on change, finish up the series on the four foundations of mindfulness or Satipatthana. So
nice. Well, P Rock, man.
Likewise. It was
good talking with you.
All right. Peace.
Much peace and love.
All right. Thanks for coming on.
You too, man.
All right.